Everyone has their Suwannee River story. Maybe yours is a sunny afternoon spent canoeing with friends, an unexpected catch while fishing from its banks. Well, for centuries, the Suwannee has been a place for gathering, celebrating, and adventuring. The Florida and Georgia nonprofit Walls Watershed Coalition wants to keep it that way. Sarah J. Jones is the group's president. She showed off her blue Walls t-shirt to me as we spoke, listing the rivers on the shirt's back like she'd done it a million times. Because, well, she has.
We've got the Withlacoochee, the Willacoochee, the Arapahoe, the Little, the Santa Fe, and the Suwannee. And that's the acronym for Walls, all of our rivers that we try to take care of.
Jones wants to keep waters drinkable, swimmable, and fishable. She said rivers don't have a voice, so it's up to us to step up and speak for them. Or even sing for them, like five musicians did earlier this month. See, Walls hosted its annual songwriting contest, and it was like a jam session for river lovers. Everywhere you looked, people were strumming their guitars or tapping their feet. You'd never guess it, but lots of these people spend their weekends on the river with petri dishes and pH strips. And there may be a need to, because so far this year, cities along the Suwannee have spilled more than 2 million gallons of raw sewage into area rivers. Walls volunteers detected and monitored many of these spills, and it's all thanks to some little pink testing kits, each about the size of a deck of cards.
Each bacterial test costs us around $10 each.
And for Sarah Jones, well, the stakes of a clean river are deeply personal. She lost a family member to throat cancer and believes that contaminated water may have been why. Attendees, too, weren't just there for good music and good company. Many of them have their own reasons for protecting the Suwannee. Take Chris Adams, better known by his curious nickname.
Most people know me as Turtle Man.
Turtle Man?
Yes.
What does that mean?
I do a lot of wildlife work in schools, fairs, and festivals across South Georgia, and that's just a name that kids know me by. I work in the Suwannee Basin, and I actually live in the Okefenokee Swamp.
And the highlight of this event? The music. Finalists from Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee performed everything from bluegrass to indie folk. And the songs were all about rivers. And it was a Lake City native who snagged first place. This is the song she submitted, Cruisin' Down the Suwannee.
Got my baby, got my boat. It ain't fancy, but it'll float. Heading to the Suwannee over from the Santa Fe.
Rachel Grubb trained as a speech pathologist, but started to write music in her mid-30s. What started as a creative outlet became a passion and eventually a part-time gig. Writing about the Suwannee River came naturally. She grew up on it.
I've never had a bad day on the river. And I mean, it's not like I'm a fisherman. I depend, my life depends on it or anything. But anytime I go, it is such a joy.
Grubb says she uses music to share what it was like growing up here. This area, she says, doesn't get much coverage, even within the Florida folk music scene.
And, you know, I live in a very rural town in a very rural area. There's not a lot of what I would call environmentalists around, but everyone appreciates rivers. And so sometimes I think it's just if we can get to where we can all appreciate what we've been given, that is what starts conservation.
And Sarah Jones agrees.
As long as people fall in love with the rivers and try to do their part to keep it clean, I'm happy.
More than 50 people attended the event and participated in its silent auction. Those funds will go towards many, many more of those little pink testing kits. Rose Schnabel, WUFT News. On a quiet fall morning, retirees and plant experts gather in a parking lot 20 miles west of Orlando. They throw shovels, gloves, and jugs of water into the back of an ATV and hike up a grassy hill. These are volunteers with the Florida Native Plant Society, and they're here to rescue some of the state's most at-risk species. Now, it's a long process. First, the group gets permission from the developer. Then, the permits. They can take years. Once the small print is sorted, it's go time. Valerie Anderson, who organized the rescue, guides me through this tunnel of longleaf pines and turkey oaks. When we get to a clearing, she grabs gloves and a few plastic pots. We kneel next to a long stem of purple flowers.
So you see, like, okay, do I have the right pot for this? I do know that these have pretty shallow root systems, and so once you have identified that you have the right pot, then you grab some leaf litter.
So I'm just grabbing
whatever kind of leaves we have. Sometimes we'll have turkey oak leaves. These are scrub or sand live oak leaves. And then I have a hori hori knife. It goes pretty deep and it cuts the roots pretty evenly. And then they grow back once the plant is in a pot.
Next, the process is clear cut. You fill the pot halfway with sand, nestle a few plants in, and give it a sprinkle of water. Then repeat throughout this sea of bright green grasses, brambly bushes, and flowers. Every plant is impressive. But some are especially exciting.
I found sand squares. I love those.
This is Laura Bennett Kimball.
Yeah, I was digging up the flat top goldenrod.
Oh, look at them.
Look at the sweet little thing.
Yeah.
They make me so happy.
Yes.
She's a volunteer who's been doing this since 2017. She can rattle off scientific names, but loves a good nickname, too. For example, there's this tall green plant with tiny white flowers, Britain's bear grass, and she's given it a new name.
And so I started calling it Britney Speargrass. So I have trouble remembering its correct name because I'm like, Britney Spears grass. So it does get silly out here.
Now, conservationists have had their eye on Castle Hill for a long time. 30 years ago, the site was set to be protected by a program called Florida Forever. But it was too expensive, and negotiations with the owner were unsuccessful. The 125 acres were divided and sold, and now two-thirds of Castle Hill is already gone, replaced by a subdivision, a medical clinic, and a parking lot. For another volunteer, Julie Becker, it's a hard change to see.
You go there and you're just sad because all that beauty is gone. All those beautiful little plants that have the most interesting things happening in them. 15, 16, 17.
The team rescued a few of those beautiful little plants today.
50, 54, 55.
Quite 60, a few.
79, 80, 81, 82.
Sometimes you can see like their little footprints.
Ben Gugliotti is a volunteer, but also a kind of plant chaperone, making sure all the plants rescued here today make it to their new home 10 miles away at Lake Apopka North Shore.
But basically, we bring them back to our shop area, and we have like a little area. It's under some palm trees, and there's just some like kind of fabric weed barrier mat that, you know, we put down, and we just put them there, and then we kind of water them regularly, kind of go through the shock of, you know, being transplanted.
Once the plants have rested, they'll go back in the ground. It's a win-win. Land managers like Gugliotti save money on plant cover, and rare species live to see another generation. Still, plant rescue ops can't save everything. The day earth movers roll through Castle Hill, a huge amount of biodiversity will still be lost. But volunteers don't let that get them down. They'll keep digging to save Florida's natural heritage, one plant at a time. Roche Schnabel, WUFT News.
Now, is this, and, this is maiden cane, right?
Yeah,
that's maiden cane.
Because that's doing pretty darn well, too.